Talk. Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the initiative Titi Paunambu, Study and Joy. Muffin Talk is a weekly radio program to which I invite guests to talk about their work, their passion for issues on community programs, social justice, Bible studies, or the Catholic Church. My interviews are done in the studio of Planet FM or via Zoom. Today, I have invited Brother Kieran Finn to a Zoom recording for a broadcast. Brother Kieran, a very warm welcome and hi to my Tau Radio program.
Kia ora beate.
Brother Kieran Finn is a Champagnat brother and Bible scholar, is originally from Gisborne and has spent many years in adult education, teaching scripture in New Zealand and abroad. Our Muffin Talk today and our online session next Friday will be on the second session of The Gospel According to Mark. Brother Kieran, your series consists of four parts and is on the Gospel of Mark. Is there a particular reason for the sequence of the topics for this course?
Yes, I think we need to begin with a sense of what a gospel is and how it came to be, and that every gospel is written with the knowledge of how it all turned out. I love the line from Joseph Fitzmyer that the risen Christ walks through the pages of the gospel from page one. So, yes, knowing how it turned out affects the way that the gospel is told. And another favorite line from Fitzmyer that I really like is that how can you pray what you don't understand? So we really do need to understand what a gospel is, how it came to be, that it's got its own shape, that it's got its own portrait of Jesus, it's got its own theology. Now, this is so important because, yes, there are biographical elements, but nobody took a diary and wrote down everything that happened during the lifetime of Jesus. It's all looking back and by word of mouth and historical memory. So, yes, the other critical aspect of it all is that you have to know what something meant in order to validly say what it means.
You mean the right context?
Definitely. It's what is called the historical critical method. And Verbum Domini, the great document that came out in 2010, said that it's an indispensable tool for understanding scripture. So that's really the first session that we've been trying to focus on, the three stages of how a gospel came to be. Now, we move from that to an overview of the gospel itself. That's our second session, to try and see what the human face of Jesus really is. And that human face is fascinating because in it, we have a Jesus who gets pretty blunt and he gets angry. He even gets impatient and he even gets critical. And that picture of the human Jesus that comes through so powerfully in Mark, within 15 years, Matthew and Luke have to touch up the picture. So these aspects of the humanity of Jesus get smoothed over, gentled over, and in some cases, just removed. So that's why I mean each gospel has got its own picture of Jesus, which is marvelous.
But that means also last time you mentioned that first people thought that Mark was a summary. And so that would not help if you see it as a summary, because then you don't see it as painted over and smooth.
Oh, and to think that that lasted right up to the 18th century, that attitude that it was just a summary of the other two. Now we have to understand this gospel in its own right, with its own perspectives. And it's such a it's the type of gospel that is embarrassing to the institution because it is so critical of the leaders. That's why our third presentation called From Blindness to Blindness. There are so many examples of people who are deaf and people who are blind, and deafness and blindness becomes a shaping factor for the disciples themselves.
So it's not the literal sense, but also the figurative sense. So it's not just the one that Jesus heals the blind man, but that's like the story with the wood in your eye. You know, you can't see. what was the story?
Yes, that's not a bad comparison, because the wood in the eye is the cross, and it's the cross that they are perpetually refusing to accept. The passage between chapters 8 and chapters 10 is dramatic. Failure after failure after failure. And honestly, that even goes into the Passion. It's staggering. You know, the final presentation that we do on the Passion narrative. But that blindness to blindness, you know, the Mark is the kind of a book that any organization would like to be without, because it's so critical of the leadership, the inauthenticity, and also of outdated traditions. Even the traditions themselves are not authentic. I mean, look at the sacred aspect, the Sabbath, again and again. The true meaning of the Sabbath is challenged. It's fasting, the place of fasting, and almsgiving. This whole aspect of questioning tradition and questioning leadership. Now, that leads us into the continuing failure that we look at in the fourth, with the Passion narrative. This is the earliest Passion narrative. It's so powerful. The whole gospel is leading into the Passion text, the Last Supper. And the tragedy of the Last Supper, the disciples, where do you want us to prepare the room for you, singular, to eat? Jesus eats the Passover, institutes the Eucharist in the midst of misunderstanding. It's a terribly lonely gospel, this one.
So you mentioned it now, the disciples asked, where do we prepare the meal for you? What does it say in the other gospels?
You will get, Matthew follows fairly closely, but you will get, where will you have us prepare? Matthew's disciples are good. They all go and prepare instead of the two in Mark. In Luke, the beauty of it is that Jesus says, I've longed to eat this meal with you before I suffer. I don't think that quite would fit the context of Mark's gospel. And it's the differences between the gospels, it's just so fascinating.
But that's when you mentioned, just with that example, because usually we all know the pictures, the paintings of the Last Supper. So that's how we understand the Last Supper. And we don't realize usually that the different gospels are very different when it comes to the Last Supper.
Oh, yes. And for a start, they lay at table. We've got them all sitting around in the wonderful Leonardo da Vinci painting. But they lay at table. And the Johannine presentation, again, is fascinating because that is so different, where you have, at the side of Jesus, you actually have Judas. Jesus makes a last desperate effort with this disciple who will betray him. But the betrayal theme in Mark is stark. You have the betrayal by Judas. You have the sleeping disciples. See, again, a lovely difference. Three times Jesus comes back to find them sleeping. In Luke, he only comes back once. Luke doesn't believe in rubbing their failure in. And the interesting thing is that in Mark, the failure is tragic. Their lack of faith. In Matthew, they're given a little faith. Oligopistes, the Greek word for little faiths. In Luke, they're good guys because they've got to found the church in Acts of the Apostles. So Luke excuses them. So many of the things that happen in Mark. I mean, Judas does not even kiss Jesus. He goes as if to kiss him. So you can see this pattern of the differing portrait. This is the starkest portrait of discipleship failure in all the Gospels. So from the sleeping to the arrest to the sword wielder. Now that's an interesting text too, because we're not told who. The implication in Mark is that it's somebody in the crowd. And then next thing you know, it goes across to one of the disciples, wields a sword, gets told off because that's not the way of Jesus. And then by the time you get to John's gospel, it becomes Peter, because Peter was such a rough and ready character. The only time that he took his foot out of his mouth. And it's Peter gets blamed for wielding the sword. So this tradition develops right through time. And that's why the Gospels are so fascinating. When you see them in parallel or all in line, the trial of Jesus, the crucifixion. Oh, that crucifixion takes place at the third hour of the day in Mark. That's 9 o'clock in the morning. So in Mark, Jesus is 6 hours on the cross. And 3 hours of darkness, three denials by Peter. Everything happens in sort of 3 hour blocks. And it's so neatly done. Three temptations on the cross, three comments. And you find what's going on. It was not orderly, it was messy. But the point is, it's Mark's way of saying that this day, this most important of all days, is under the control of God. And finally, Jesus dies with that agonizing cry, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani. My God, why have you forsaken me? The opening line of Psalm 22. Now, sure, it moves gently into trust and confidence, but we should allow that painful cry of my God, why have you forsaken me? Take us back into the failure, the abandonment. They all forsook him and fled. But then he was failed by his family who wanted to take him away. He was failed by the leaders. So what is going on in this gospel? We don't even get a very clear resurrection story. We get the empty tomb. We get the message of the young man to the women at the tomb. And the women at the tomb were terrified. Well, if an angel turns up, I think that's natural. But it says they said nothing because they were afraid. And the gospel originally stopped there.
And you know that the gospel stopped there. How do we know that?
Because the manuscripts we have, the earliest manuscripts, there's nothing after that. And in the early church, they sort of felt, they got all sorts of excuses. Maybe he died before he finished it, or maybe the ending got lost and so on in the copying out. But I believe it is the finish, the original finish, because I think Mark is saying to us that will you too be so afraid that you will not carry out this message of Christ. The important thing is that all the stuff that's added on after chapter 16, verse 8, was the uncomfortableness of the early church that they had to put resurrection stories in afterwards. This is the gospel of the cross. It's consistently the gospel of the cross. There's that touch of the resurrection. He is not here, he is risen. All right? Now, obviously, the message would never have got out if the women had not broken their fearful silence. Right? But this is the peculiarity and individuality of Mark. And the message does get out because the suffering community that Mark is writing for, the cross is a reality. I mean, Jesus tells them, take up your cross and follow me is the essential element of discipleship. And for those, the community of Mark, it was a reality. The persecution of Nero had just taken place. And if it was Rome, if it was northern Syria, as another second possibility, again, it was a center of persecution.
There were lots of martyrs from that time.
Oh, yes, yes. But again, remember, martyrdom was sporadic. And I think we need to recognize that too. So, yes, this uncomfortable ending we had to have. Now, this is canonical. The ending is all the aftermath, the longer ending, the shorter ending. It's picked up from other gospels and from Acts of the Apostles. And I would recommend don't try drinking poison and picking up snakes unless you're St. Paul on the Isle of Malta. Right, so you can see where a lot of this comes from.
How long would Mark have been originally? Would it have been 15 chapters?
For 16 verse 8. But remember, they didn't have chapters and verses. They were all added later on, 18 to 19, just as it did not have the gospel according to Mark. That was put there. I think the original introduction to the Gospel of Mark was the beginning of the good news of Jesus the Christ, Son of God. Now, that was the original heading. But the headings and the names of the authors of these Gospels, they never named them the author at all. But it was given at the late second century. So, again, I think perhaps there's some historical memory, perhaps there's more an appropriate association to give them the titles that we have now given to those four Gospels. So, yes, that's our journey through the sequence, right?
That's quite a journey, and it's interesting to see also the differences between Mark and the other Gospels. And as you said, Mark was not read for the whole of Christianity. It was rediscovered in a way. So I understand that when you look at the old churches, Gothic and Baroque churches, you would have the evangelists on the pulpit usually, but it's very sad that you had them there, but you didn't hear much about Mark.
That's right. And now I think Mark has got a tremendous importance for our day. It's a message to the church in its weakness, the weakness and the sinfulness of the leaders. And we've got the Royal Commission going on currently. And sadly, we're going to know more and hear more about this tragedy of the weak, sinful leadership. So, yes. So there is a message to the church, a message to the now world, that, and also that freedom is costly.
Brother Ken, can we say that the gospel according to Mark was important for the people of his time? And when the people moved on, when their persecution was not as bad as it was before, then the concentration was more on the next three gospels. And so the first one was more or less forgotten. But in order to keep the four, that specific number, what you mentioned last time in your interview, that's why you still kept on the gospel according to Mark, but it was not really used. Is that right?
I think that's part of it, because certainly you have, with the influx of catechists, the natural gospel would be the teaching gospel. And that's where Matthew comes into its own. And then I think, well, Luke, of course, is there. Luke's got the joy, and it's a beautiful gospel. Well, I mean, look at the great parables of the prodigal son and of the Good Samaritan. Yes, exactly. Mary's gospel. But then Mark, I think we've got to recognize the miracles, 15 miracles in the first 8 chapters. That's a topic. See, the trouble with only 4 sessions is we can't do all the miracles and the parables, only a few parables. The thing that I love about the parable of the sower is it's kept its name. We didn't change it into the parable of the seed and the parable of the soils and so on, because I always say after teaching that one, look to the sower. That's important. And I think that's important. And the other interesting thing is there's only one piece, one parable that is unique to Mark, and that's the parable of the seed growing secretly. First, the stalk, then the ear. So, yes, maybe this little gospel was sort of sitting there waiting to be rediscovered. And the other interesting thing you only find in Luke, you only find in Mark, that fascinating little piece about the first streaker who fled from the garden naked, leaving his cloak. Now, honestly, people get some weird and wonderful ideas. I think it's Alfred Hitchcock style. He's in his own Mark, in his own gospel. I really think that Raymond Brown, the great scholar, he said that, look, when you look at the early disciples, that when Jesus calls these 4 at the edge of the sea, those 4 leave everything to follow him. And this young fellow in the thieves in the garden, he left everything to run away from Jesus, leaving everything to follow, leaving everything to run away. It's the other side of the coin, right? And I think that's beautiful. The discipleship theme is so powerful in the Gospel of Mark.
But then you also mentioned the 14 miracles or 15 miracles, so many miracles. But at the same time, you also mentioned that the miracles have to be seen in 2 ways. So when you have a miracle of blindness, he might be appealing to your blindness in a different way of blindness. So maybe we can say that these miracles are for us an incentive to look at what they mean to us and in which way Jesus might help us.
Well, I think the point is that the first 15 are a picture portrait of a Jesus in power. I think the sad thing about it is that Jesus can silence the demons, but he can't get a good a response from the humans. And I think something tragic about that. There's so many tragic touches, like John the Baptist, when he's beheaded, his disciples went and claimed the body of their master. Where were Jesus' disciples when he died? They all forsook him and fled. And Peter made it worse even. So, yes, that it's unremitting, this challenge to be faithful disciples, because the cross has got to be taken on as part of genuine discipleship. I mean, it costs to be a faithful Christian. The cross is part of the life of all of us. And we see that in these days of the COVID. The cross is part of the life of all of us. But the gospel doesn't leave us with that tragic, on that tragic note. It leaves us with the women at the tomb who will become faithful disciples. They will take the message to Peter and the other disciples. Peter has to get named specifically because he's had the biggest fall along with Judas. And they're to go to Galilee. And Galilee is Galilee of the Gentiles. And that means you start again because the gospel began in Galilee. That's where it all began. Go back, start again. I think the beauty of this gospel is that it is such an encouragement to struggling people to start again.
So would you consider this as like the key message that we should not give up hope? And given the fact that it was written in a time when people were suffering, and Jesus said, even if you have to start all over again, even if you have been betrayed by your best friends, do not give up. Is that the message?
And I think that is so true of between chapters 8 and chapters 10, with those three dramatic failures, Jesus never fails failing disciples. He picks them up. He instructs them. He teaches them. He encourages them.
It reminds me of the 77 times.
Yes. That was a good effort on Peter's part, seven, but no, 70 times, seven times. But again, that's an interesting piece too, because one of the things that we haven't touched on is the Old Testament background.
Well, I think that's something that we are going to hear in the talk.
Okay. Prophet Isaiah.
Even the fact that you mentioned that Jesus' last words on the cross were in Hebrew, and you said that it was a quote from a psalm, already shows a very, very important connection to the Old Testament.
Oh, yes.
So that's a key message.
That's it. That's it. The way that the gospel is written in the light of the resurrection, but in the light of the fulfillment of Scripture. The scriptures must be fulfilled. That is a whole study on its own. Isaiah keeps coming in.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Brother Kieran. And we're looking forward to the sessions. So for those of the listeners who are listening today, Friday, so there is in the evening the very first of the four sessions. If you have missed the first session, you can still join the other three. It's every Friday in November. We're starting at 7 o'clock in the evening until 8:30. These are sessions that are connected but also standalone. It's all via Zoom, so it's online. You don't have to travel anywhere, and you just need to register with us. And also please note that we have a retreat day with Eamon Butler coming up, and his online retreat day is about the topic, Who Am I? Reflecting on Our Identity in God. So this retreat day will be held on Saturday, the 28th of November, 10:30 to 4 p.m., and it is also online. So all events are on my website at www.studyjoy.nz. And for more information and registration, please also contact me at info@studyjoy.nz. And I wish you all a good Friday, a good week ahead. Kia kaha, and keep safe. And we hope that we'll see you for Brother Kieran's courses. So thank you very much, Brother Kieran.
I thank you, Beate.
Okay, wonderful.